Good afternoon, this is Ketchel Kirkham with Looking Up, a few minutes at the end of the week to think about astronomical things. Last week, three astronauts travelled to the International Space Station. Nothing new about that, except that they took 2 days to get there. The ISS is only about 350 kilometres from the surface of the Earth, and in case you didn't know, it's a mere 100 kilometres to outer space, straight up all the way. So it's not very far, and in space there is no friction, or only a little close to the Earth, to slow down your craft. It used to take a couple of days to get to the ISS until the Russians figured out a smarter way to get the Soyuz capsule to dock. If you're wondering why you can't just fly straight up, well, it's because you want to minimise the amount of fuel you use when you launch off the planet's surface. And fuel is heavy stuff, and every gram you launch up there must fight against gravity. So you take advantage of the Earth's spin and of orbital characteristics to fly round and round the Earth in ever-increasing spirals until you reach your target. And as it only takes about 3/4 of an hour to fly around the Earth at the ISS's altitude, this is quite feasible. But in order to increase that spiral and move further out, this takes fuel, so it's something you need to be a little bit clever about. Anyhow, in 2013, the Russians worked out a 5-hour method of getting from Baikonur in Kazakhstan, which is the launch site, to the International Space Station. But this trend last week was bucked. The reason is to test out a number of upgrades to the Soyuz spacecraft, which is the main way we get things and people to the International Space Station. Those upgrades include a new digital video transmitter and encoder to send engineering videos of the ship's approach to the station, which is used for docking, and a new relay telemetry capability, along with an upgraded automated rendezvous antenna and an improved satellite navigation system to better calculate the Soyuz positions in space. So it's having a real technical facelift. The spacecraft is now also equipped with upgraded thrusters, additional micrometeoroid debris shielding, redundant electrical motors on the docking probe, and additional photovoltaic cells for the spacecraft's solar array. So they've taken this extra time in the Soyuz capsule to carry out tests on these new gizmos. The Soyuz capsule is the size of a minibus taxi, so they best all get on in there. I mean, it's very small, and to spend quite a number of days in a capsule waiting to get to the International Space Station must be quite tense. And one of the crew members is Kate Rubin, and she's the 60th woman to leave the planet. She's a microbiologist with a doctorate in cancer biology, and she'll be the first researcher to sequence DNA in space. She was selected to become a NASA astronaut in 2009, and interestingly, she always wanted to be an astronaut, but saw no contradiction in having that ambition as well as being a biologist. And indeed, there isn't. These days, all sorts of researchers get to go to the ISS. And when we launch the human race into space for real, that is, colonize another planet, all kinds of specialists will be needed. They should also send up some comedians and poets. I mean, it could get quite tense up there. And so just in case Elon Musk is listening, there's a good idea. Just a little aside, why is it that when you see pictures of astronauts all suited up, they have name tags? I mean, nobody's going to mistake them for anyone else. So maybe it's just for posterity, in case images in the future, when they're all dead and gone, don't have captions, we know who that person was, which is quite a spooky thought, really. Anyway, they all look very funny to me with their little name tags. So, the latest news from Jupiter. The probe Juno, which managed its dangerous manoeuvres last week and will spend the next few months gathering unprecedented data about Jupiter, has taken unique images of the Jovian moons as they dance around the giant planet. If you get a chance to see them, take a look on the internet at a video clip of Callisto, Europa, Ganymede and Io circling the giant planet in a first-of-its-kind view of celestial dynamics. It's out of this world. And more news in the radio astronomy realm. Since we're building the Square Kilometre Array nearby, I often mention it, and I also happen to be working on it, so it's right here, right now. But it's not the only radio observatory around. The Chinese have just put finishing touches to their enormous single-dish observatory. It's the 500-metre aperture spherical telescope's giant dish called FAST. With a dish the size of 30 football fields, FAST is by far the largest single-aperture telescope in the world. Though arrays that link up multiple radio dishes cover more ground, including Meerkat and the SKA. The previous record holder in the field is the 300 metres Arecibo Observatory in Puerto Rico. FAST was built more than 2,000 kilometres southwest of Beijing, and the $180 million facility should help scientists learn more about the universe's early days detect low-frequency gravitational waves, and hunt for signals that may have been produced by distant alien civilizations. So that's the latest about astronomy in space for now. This is Ketchel Kirkham wishing clear skies.